Welcome to episode 4 of the Indie Marketers Podcast. My name is Mike McFarland. Welcome back. It's 2023 now, and we are starting off this year with a banger of an episode. A few weeks ago, I was on LinkedIn, as one does, and I posted that one of my goals for this podcast in 2023 was to have John Miller, the co-founder of Marketo, and Steve Woods, the co-founder of Eloqua, on the podcast to talk about what it was like competing, to talk about what it was like going head-to-head against each other, what it was like basically building the marketing automation space. And they agreed, which is awesome, because not only did I get to achieve one of my goals of having two folks that I have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for, I get to continue the trend of having really awesome guests on this show. We started with Lee Oxley. We went on to Stephen Stouffer. Now we've got John and Steve joining us, and we've got some great guests coming down the pipe as well, which is really, truly exciting. So for those of you that are maybe listening for the first time, I appreciate it. For those of you who are coming back and listening to the new episode of the ones that I've already recorded, thank you. And thank you to everyone that listens. I just recently crossed over the 200 download mark, which maybe doesn't seem like a lot in the podcasting world, but for this guy, really does mean a lot. And I'm hoping that folks are getting something out of it by listening to some really smart folks. I'm saying folks a lot, sorry, to some really smart people that are doing some really cool shit in the MarTech space. Before we jump into the interview, as I do, we got to talk about the music that is being played in this episode. So I kind of went back on my word about changing it up in 2023. I didn't really change anything. Still rocking a Canadian band, still rocking a pretty good just rock band. Who you heard at the beginning of the episode and who you'll hear at the end of the episode is a band called Limb Lifter. And the song you heard coming into the episode was called Haystack Rock. And the song you're going to hear at the end of the episode is called Watch Later List. Both of these are off of their most recent album, which came out late last year, called Little Pain. Kind of like Joe Payne, talking about Eloqua. We're talking about the golden age of marketing automation for some folks. We can't not talk about Joe Payne in that regard, but I guess that was kind of a coincidence that this album's called Little Payne, P-A-Y-N-E, and Joe Payne's last name is Payne. Anywho, let's just we'll move on from that. Really great band. These guys, again, were kind of foundational to my teenage years. They were really big during the mid-90s. Had a bunch of songs that played on the local music station, Much Music. Songs like Tinfoil or Cordova or Ariel versus Lotus. And they are still rocking in a slightly different format, I think, than what they used to, but they are still rocking, still putting out great tunes. Give them a listen. They are certainly on the Apple Music. They are on the Spotify's and probably wherever else you consume your music these days. So another Canadian band, another good banger, another good rock band. Give them a listen. Before we jump into the interview again, one last thing to remind everyone, you can follow us on Instagram at 3mg.ca, on TikTok at 3mg.ca. You can find me on LinkedIn, Mike McFarland. You can find 3MG on LinkedIn as well. We're also on YouTube. These episodes will be on YouTube. And you can find us at 3MG-CA as our, I guess, new YouTube handle, because YouTube now has handles. But you can find this podcast as well as the teaser for my upcoming YouTube series, Mike Versus. Big explosions, all that shit. Not really, but you know. So enough of me rambling. Let's get started. Jumping in with John Miller, co-founder of Marketo, and Steve Woods, co-founder of Eloqua. Let's go. I am absolutely honored and privileged to have two of the most influential people in my career, because I don't have a career without these folks. Steve Woods, co-founder of Eloqua, John Miller, co-founder of Marketo. How's it going, gentlemen?
It's going really well. Thank you for having us. It's great to have an opportunity to hang out with Steve again, and always love talking about marketing tech.
Awesome.
Likewise, been a while, but it was a fun run and good to see you've really made a strong go out of it, Mike.
No, and for folks that are maybe listening for the first time, I put out a post on LinkedIn saying one of my goals for 2023 was to have John and Steve join me on the podcast, and both of you enthusiastically said, let's do it. So very much appreciate you both making the time. And we'll have a really great conversation today. So let's just jump right in. I was inspired with this first question for both of you after watching, this is going to sound a little silly maybe, but it, for me, it's very relevant, watching an interview between Steve Jobs and Bill Gates when they were being interviewed by Kara Swisher way back in the day. And the first question that she asked each of them was, what do you think each of you have contributed to the MarTech industry? So maybe, Steve, I'll start with you. What do you think John's contributed?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and that's a pretty high bar to compare to. So I think I can start by saying neither of us have contributed quite as much as those two giants.
Awesome.
But I think if you look at it, there was a lot about that era in time. Right? You had sort of this like early start of the internet, which was a little skeuomorphic, right? Like sort of the early internet was just a replica of offline, but now done digitally, and quite static and quite structured in a similar way to the way that everything had done prior. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, and John, I don't know if I'm speaking for you on this, but there's an element of timing of coming into that space as there was enough energy, enough momentum to say, okay, we're all here on this internet thing, and it's clearly going to be very, very important to the way things are marketed, sold, talked about. Now there's a time for reinventing what that approach is, right? Like take all these digital tools that we're using in a skeuomorphic manner, and now think about, okay, internet first, what do we actually do that's completely different? And so I think we were sort of stumbling through it a little bit, figuring out some things that might work. 75% of them work, and then you double down on those. Then we'd look over at what John's doing, and he's got a couple of things that are working. We're like, okay, well, let's market that we came up with that first and do a different job of it and tie it into the slightly, we had similar worlds, obviously, very competitive. But you end up different enough that even if you're trying to emulate something else, you end up with a different take on it naturally. And so I think that reality really drove this tidal wave of change. And we were just lucky enough to be kind of a big part of where that wave was taking the world, because we happened to be building the engines that were transformative to the way marketing was done, as marketing itself said, hey, we got to change. This is a new reality.
Absolutely. Yeah. What do you think, John?
Yeah. I mean, I think Steve and Eloqua, you know, I mean, they got started 5 or 6 years before Marketo did. And so I think a lot of the early innovation, you know, thinking of things like digital body language, the digital body language to be able to track what people did online. You know, I think that's all contributions that came from, you know, Steve. You know, when we started Marketo, we didn't necessarily intend to go compete with Eloqua. We started with a business model in mind. You know, as a reminder, Phil and I were coming out of Epiphany, which had been a MarTech company more focused on B2C, but it's on-premise software. And our, you know, our ideas for Marketo was really that, you know, with SaaS becoming really mainstream, you know, that was just a better way to sell MarTech, because it's aligned to how marketers buy. you know, we have big program budgets. We don't have big capital budgets. So we were just started with that. Like, all right, let's build a something in MarTech that's really, really embraces SaaS.
Right.
Not a lot of people know this. Our very first product was actually a tool for pay-per-click bid optimization. Because we thought, well, that'd be a kind of an interesting, you know, product to go build. You know, and then we knew we wanted to add email as a feature, you know, to this kind of thing that we're building. And it was just interesting. Like as we sort of built that out, you know, we knew, okay, people are talking about lead nurturing and lead scoring and all these other things. So we should go build that, you know, and what happened was we just ended up with that product that was like, oh, people seem to really like it. They liked it so much that we thought, all right, well, let's focus on that and drop this pay-per-click stuff. So again, I'll give the credit to the innovation really to Steve and Eloqua. I think at Marketo, what we did is we just, you know, I think took something that was already happening and poured fuel on the fire, and then probably did a pretty good job of just teaching people about it and talking about it in education and educating.
But I think in a lot of ways, I mean, I'll hand a lot of the credit back on that business model. We were, you know, we did start it a few years earlier. We had our own little strange stumble at the start. We were a chat product, right? Sort of kind of like what you'd see with a Drift or one of those now. Obviously they've done a slightly better job than we did. And then we sort of made our way into what became marketing automation, but we didn't have the innovations around the business model. We were very much, it was SaaS software in terms of what it was built as and delivered as, but the go-to-market strategy was enterprise software for us. And so when Marketo came on the scene and just did a beautiful job of the whole awareness, consideration, purchase, onboarding side of the demand curve, we were just flat-footed. Like we had nothing there and just, you know, got destroyed for a while until we were able to kind of come back and attempt to reinvent what we were around the entire experience, right? We'd sort of, being enterprise software, sold through a classic enterprise software model, we were just too heavy on this sort of over the fence handoff of go hunt big game, throw it over the wall to us, and we'll figure shit out after a while, versus kind of the SaaS model that, you know, is now fairly normal. But when John came in and was doing that in this space, it was completely disruptive to us because that whole, there isn't a wall to hold things over, changed the game and caught us very flat-footed.
I mean, that's a really important point to emphasize. I mean, like the pay-per-click product was product-led growth. That's what, I mean, we didn't call it that, but that's what it is today. I mean, you went to the website, you signed up, you started using it. And so we had this ethos that this thing had to be really easy to buy, easy to own, and easy to use because we didn't expect that we were going to be involved in the middle. And then even then when with the marketing automation product, we realized people don't just sign up for a marketing automation product as a free trial and start using it because nobody knows how. Mm-hmm. So we had to, in some ways, make it harder to buy, you know, and just put these sort of barriers in to just make it and raise the price to make it work. That DNA.
You should have called. We could have taught you lots about hard to buy and expensive.
Yeah. So, but that DNA, I think, did help us.
Awesome. That's it's interesting. Like I, just having worked at Eloqua, I knew the background of Eloqua being a chat product, and Eloqua Now, I think, is what it used to be called. I didn't know that Marketo didn't start off as a marketing automation platform. It started off as pay-per-click. That's good little history lesson for all the folks out there as terms of kind of understanding what you see now is not certainly what it started out as. You guys talk a little bit about competition, and I'm wondering kind of in the heat of competition, because I can remember very vividly back between, I would say 2008 to 2012, Marketo and Eloqua were competing with pretty much everything. How did you guys look at each other kind of in the heat of competition? Up here and everyone else was kind of down below. And I'm not saying that to throw shade or anything like that, but was there anything with regards to other competitors that you guys would look at that said like, hey, we got to pay attention to these guys because they're doing some really cool shit too?
Well, I think every market space and marketing automation is no different than this. You all gravitate to very similar local maxima. Like there's a set of capabilities that the world out there is going to care about, and there's a bunch of stuff the world's not going to care about. And what ends up happening, regardless of where you start, you get pulled by the market into this local maximum of what you need to have. And so, yeah, you had a bunch of players that started, and they had a different take on things, and they were better at this or they were worse at that. But the gravitational pull to that local maximum was the same for everyone, right? So that's what creates a space in almost every field of software. You get that, right? Like after a while, there's a thing and there's five competitors in that thing, and they all start to look really, really similar, because when somebody comes out with something that the market cares about, there's a gravitational pull to emulate that in some way. So yeah, we all started different. We all started getting pulled towards this local maxima, but at the same time, you know, there are pay-per-click players that got pulled to a different local maxima and are battling it out. There are chat players that got pulled to a different local maxima and are battling it out. Each of us had our little branching point and kind of went left instead of going right. But that was sort of, by that point, you're just pulled in by the force of gravity to get to the local maxima. A lot of the players that you mentioned, I mean, they were either smaller or later. So they were in the market for sure. But I think if you look at the sort of the lion's share of attention, at least at Eloquent that we paid, the lion's share of that, I think, was focused on where Marketo was and how we structure ourselves to make sure that we're more competitive in that. We did try and focus on, like, what do we need to do for the market?
Right.
Fundamentally, but if there's any competitive attention being paid, most of that was towards what Marketo was doing and where they were winning.
Yeah, I would say, you know, for Eloquo is the top competitor for Marketo during my time, you know, as well. I think, you know, one of the things, you know, well, I'll say a couple of things. I think one thing that Marketo kind of near the end of my time did really well is the concept of the marketing nation. You know, and really starting to differentiate not just on the product, but on the community and the ecosystem, the partners, just the, you know, the customer base and all that kind of thing. So I think that's, you know, over time that I think also started to emerge as a differentiator. But the thing that ultimately mattered in this industry more than anything else was the business development of where all these different companies ended up. You know, I mean, Eloqua inside of Oracle, you know, arguably didn't thrive as much as, you know, Pardot did inside of Salesforce. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, that Pardot probably has become the dominant platform today because of Salesforce, not because of being the best solution, the best technology stack for marketers, but just because of, you know, the ecosystem around that. And I don't think we can underestimate how important that is. You know, and then which cup of all these marketing platforms, which is the one that sort of become the most valuable? It's HubSpot, probably, right? Because of its sort of move into being more than just marketing automation, you know, and they accomplished that because they never did sell to some, you know, an Adobe or anybody else. So it's just interesting to kind of, you know, really think about this with that lens.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's something I want to ask towards the end, just given that both the companies that you guys created have both moved on to Oracle and Adobe, trying to see how do you guys think the platforms have done since those acquisitions? Do you think that that there's been continuous innovation still? Are there things that you're happy are still the same as what they were back maybe 10, 12 years ago? Anything like that?
Well, I mean, I think John's right that, you know, what ends up mattering at the end is a different game of strategic biz dev, right? And that game, you know, that game is more played by the teams at Oracle and Salesforce than it was by the teams at Eloqua and Marketo. We were there, obviously, we all had relationships, that's great. But it becomes their decision on when they put those checks on the table. And I think you've got to zoom out and remember that they're all playing very different games, right? Like, if you look at the Oracle versus Salesforce competition, and the breadth of footprint that each company had and their strengths and weaknesses, completely different games than what we were playing. And then marketing automation becomes, instead of a standalone platform like it was when we were running them independently, it becomes a feature within a broader game of, can Oracle win against a SaaS CRM-based dominant player for sort of fairly breadth of kind of business operating system functionality. Totally different game, right? And I think the assessment of who's thrived and who's done well based on that sort of the great game strategy there that John just put out is very accurate. But, you know, at that point when those acquisitions all happened in a very short succession,
yep.
I don't think it's a stretch of an argument to say that they were triggered by each other, right? As soon as you see one, if you're in that room doing strategic M&A, you pay a lot of attention to that. And you're like, okay, well, how many chips are left in that bag? Okay, we're going to get one and here's what it's going to be. So right. It happened very quickly, changed the nature of the game. And now you've really got a very different dynamic. Salesforce Pardot coming at it from a suite perspective, HubSpot broadened out a lot more, Adobe, you know, very much sort of the marketer centric world, completely different landscape now.
Yeah, no, agreed. Kind of going back to kind of the heat of the competition of things, was there anything that you guys can remember from a product standpoint that helped drive innovation because of the competition? Was there something, Steve, that you saw Marketo doing? It's like, well, we got to start doing the same thing because Marketo's doing this really well. Or John, did you see something Eloqua was doing that was like, hey, we need to get into this game too. There's a really big untapped opportunity for us here.
I mean, yeah. I mean, short answer is not really, besides what I already said earlier, which is like, once we realized we wanted to build email into our platform, you know, the use cases that customers were asking about were very obviously the use cases that Eloqua had,
right?
You know, and scoring, you know, and some of those types of things. So Eloqua did drive a lot of the early requirements for Marketo. You know, that's certainly true. But once we were up and running, not as much. You know, I'll give you an example of kind of how some of our best innovations came about. You know, one of the things is, you know, we were always really good users of the platform ourselves. I call it drinking your own champagne. My head of demand gen, Kelly Abner, you know, one of the things that he would sort of complain about is every time there was another webinar, he had to like build everything from scratch, you know? And so obviously like, all right, it would be interesting to just have a clone capability. Right. So we wouldn't have to build everything from scratch. But even better was a clone capability where a couple of key aspects were parameterized, like the date of the webinar and the registration link and the name of the speaker. And, you know, this is where we built the idea of programs into Marketo, which you could define these sort of local variables. And then when you clone the program, all you do is you update a couple of local variables and you're done. You know, I would say that was a cool innovation, but it really came from listening to users, in this case, our own internal user.
Yeah, and I would say it's interesting in the sense of when you first start out and you're trying to figure out if there's a local maxima in terms of the space you're going to go after, features matter a fair bit. What do you do and what can you do that wasn't possible a year ago or without this tool? Features kind of matter. But after that, when you're all sort of starting to coalesce around this sort of commonly defined space, it's the other things that matter, right? It's the go-to-market strategy and sort of ease of access, it's reputation, it's community, it's partners, all of those other pieces that are not, they're not classically functional, although they're enabled by functionality, begin to matter far more. So as the competition started to heat up, kind of, 08, 09, 10, we're already in a space where we both had the exact same high-level checkboxes. Can you send a bunch of emails, write a bunch of rules, do a bunch of things? Yeah, we can both do that. Is there a little third-order nuance where, oh, well, if you kind of get in here, we can do this crazy thing and you can't? Like, you can't get a customer to care about that. If you do, you've probably already lost the battle. So there were those things, but you just couldn't go there. But if you look at where the energy of our R&D got put, because we were sort of on our heels with the go-to-market, the ease of access, all the way from sort of, you know, consideration to purchase, that's where a lot of our R&D went. was it, I mean, sort of, it's semi-feature oriented, right? Is it a bell and whistle where you've got a button and you click the red button and it does this? No, it's not. Is it product work to make things easier and smoother and more onboardable? Yeah, it's product work, and you're writing code and you're changing the UI. And I'd say much of that in our reality was pushed by the market, pushed by Marketo, pushed by being kind of behind on a lot of those fronts.
Got it. Curious for me personally, was Eloqua 10 a result of that?
Well, I think with any form of software, you always end up in a scenario where you've built a lot, you have a lot of customers that are using the thing that you've built in a variety of ways, many edge cases, many, many strange usage patterns. If you look at any individual customer, they only use a couple of things. If you look at any aggregate use of capabilities, there ends up being many capabilities that are only used by a small number of customers. So the high level view is, we just need to invent like the three basic functionality pieces and have them super smooth, great. And you always run into this transition problem of, but when you're gonna move this customer to it, they need that edge case that nobody else needs. When you're gonna move this customer, they need that edge case. So you end up in the same conundrum when you've built something, rapidly added to it in a fairly fast moving market pace, when you're dealing with enterprise customers that have lots of opinions on what they want built. And it's a hard problem. Like, trying to take the beast and make it simpler is a really hard path. Trying to reinvent from scratch and then satisfy the existing customers is a really hard path. So I guess to get back to your actual question, the pressures around that time of, we need to become radically better at the whole go-to-market side of the equation, yes, led to the discussions. The ultimate decision coming out of that was to do a little bit more of a rebuild approach as opposed to a refactor approach, knowing, of course, that both paths were really kind of hard paths.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You guys are both entrepreneurs. Steve, Eloqua, Nudge, John, Marketo, Engageo. What have been your biggest learnings from starting these companies? What have you been able to carry on throughout your careers, or just general learnings just in terms of how you live your life too? John, I'll start with you.
You know, Steve was talking earlier about how companies tend to gravitate towards like a local maximum. You know, this is, I think, really similar to the concept that I've kind of heard about, how industries tend to, you know, coalesce around a dominant design. You know, in the early days of a category, there's lots of people kind of casting about, you know, and trying kind of different approaches. But then eventually dominant design kind of wins. I think the best example of that is kind of the iPhone and the fact that phones don't have keyboards anymore. You know, like once that kind of dominant design emerged, everybody started doing that. Now every phone kind of looks a little kind of the same. So, you know, for me, the Marketo experience kind of, you know, led me to sort of, you know, just kind of conclude that I prefer, as an entrepreneur, to try to find an existing early category where the need has been proven out, but the dominant design hasn't really coalesced around the dominant design yet. My hunch is that's where the best opportunities for success are. You know, whereas, you know, Steve's co-founder, Mark, is all about like, let me invent a whole new category from nothing and you know, really kind of, you know, go from zero. That's sort of not my approach. In some ways, I tried to do that at Engageo too. You know, where ABM existed when I started it, but nobody had really kind of quite landed on the dominant design. In the end, I realized that to deliver the dominant design, I needed to merge Engageo and Demandbase, which is kind of what led me to make that move.
Right.
But because I wasn't able to get there on my own, but kind of similar strategy. So that's sort of, you know, one of the lessons I have is, you know, that I would always sort of look for those opportunities.
Yeah, I'd agree with all that. Let me maybe take a totally different tack. I'd say there's a few things that I pop out. One of them is that every cheesy adage in business is probably true, but virtually impossible to understand until you've touched the hot stove, right? Like you sort of, if you have sort of a young person trying to get sage advice from a person who's been there and done that, language is such a lossy mechanism that you try and gel down all of these years of experience and you end up with this sort of like cheesy adage of the customer is always right. You're like, well, what do I do with that? Or any of the other adages that you've probably heard. And I think the reason I call them all hot stove things is it's like when you've got a kid and you're like, don't touch the hot stove, don't touch the hot stove, don't touch the hot stove. Psst, ow, why didn't you tell me, right? Like the adages are all true, but in many cases useless until you've had your own experience to get there. And then you're like, oh, yeah, that's what that means, whether it's sort of a, you know, cash is king metaphor, you know, any of these things, they're true once you've gotten there on your own. So I'm always hesitant to give too much advice because I know it comes across uselessly, just by the nature of it. And so the other thing is just a general sense of how much more relevant the broader macro factors are around you than anything you do, right? Like if you're able to find that point in the market, you know, the wave, the opportunity for category creation, the dominant design just coming out, if you can find that wave already happening and just kind of get into it, you're a lot better off than if you try and push a market to somewhere it's not naturally moving. And I think relatedly, understanding just how long the long game is, like, I mean, John and I have known each other now for over two decades. If we were jackasses to each other and competed in sort of vicious terms, like, it just wouldn't be as fun. You know, there's many chances for you to interact with the same set of humans over a long period of time, and just keeping it, keeping yourself attentive to the long game and playing above board is just a better plan than trying to eke out a short-term win that is going to come back to haunt you in years or decades.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I don't like to call myself an entrepreneur, even though I guess I kind of am because I started my own company. But like, I think to your point, you hear all of these cliches, these adages, and so you don't really understand them until you go through them. So it's like touching the stove. Like, yes, I know it's hot, but I'm still going to touch it anyway, because I need to really understand if it's really that hot. So I can certainly appreciate that. Are there any fond memories that either of you guys have of that time? Like for me, that was really when I kind of sunk my teeth into the whole idea of marketing automation. I was in marketing ops at Eloqua at the time. And really learning like the what marketing automation can do, and just looking beyond that, what marketing operations can do and what marketing operations is. Is there any fond memories that either of you guys have of that time period, be it from a product standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, from going to Dreamforce and seeing each other at competing booths or anything like that?
I mean, I think almost all entrepreneurship is a camping in the rain kind of activity, right? Like at the time, there's lots of it that sucks and is hard, but you get the best stories out of it.
Yeah.
And when you look back, memory does a really funny thing, right? Like the most interesting and hilarious and reshareable and retellable memories, if you actually analyze them, they're often the shitty times, right? They're like that road trip where we stayed at the Motel 6 or whatever, that was not fun. But damn, there's some funny stories that came out of it. And you get a lifetime of like reliving and retelling those stories among that group of friends. So I think, you know, your question of are there fun memories? yeah. Do they deserve to be fond memories? I don't know. That's a quirk of human memory that makes them more fond than they probably earned otherwise. But yeah, it's a life experience starting a business in a high growth space like that and being in really intense competition with a competitor that you tremendously respect and can hold you on the mat. It's intense, but you get a lot of good stories, and it's really fun to look back on them years later with the bad parts filtered out.
How about you, John?
Well, I really like Steve's answer, and I miss kind of just hearing Steve talk sometimes, because he's got a lot of good kind of ways of talking about things. So this has been fun. You know, for me, I mean, if I just look back sort of, you know, my fondest memories really are the times where kind of I got to be a teacher more than anything else. You know, I actually come from a family of teachers. My mom's a teacher. My sister's a teacher. My uncle's a professor. Even though my dad was a lawyer, he did a lot of work doing continuing education, you know, and teaching. So I feel like I have kind of just teaching in my blood. And I think that's sort of when I'm happiest, right? Is when, whether I'm writing a definitive guide or being on stage, sharing secret sauce. If I'm just teaching, those are the happiest memories I have.
That's awesome. Yeah. I resonate a lot with that, John. I think for me too, just having been in the industry as long as I have and being able to learn from folks like you guys, being able to share that with people that are going through it for the first time. I work with some clients today that are 23, 24 years old, much like when I first started. And to see the light bulb moments that they get when they've learned something new for the first time or learned that something's possible is extremely rewarding, more than I think anything else that I do in my career. So I can certainly appreciate that. I guess before we wrap up here, 2023 is here. John, you're obviously still very much in the MarTech space with Demand Base. Steve, you helped create the space. Do you guys have any predictions around where you see MarTech marketing automation going in 2023?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tackle that. I mean, just because since I started Engageo, I've sort of felt that the marketing automation category is sort of, which as Steve said, is about two decades old, is ripe for reinvention. You know, right now I'm in the category where I sell ABM platforms, and I've got customers who are buying an ABM platform and a marketing automation platform, and they're sitting side by side, and yet they both sync data from CRM and track visitors on the website and let you make lists and segments, and they track results and they let you automate processes. And so I think the trend here has got to be, you're not going to have two different platforms for two different kinds of go-to-market. You're going to have one go-to-market platform. That's absolutely part of Demand Base's vision. Apparently Forrester this year is consolidating their waves for kind of traditional market automation and traditional ABM platforms. So I'm pretty sure that's where this thing's headed.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I would be very hesitant to pontificate on the future of the marketing space, because I'd say I've basically been out of it for a decade. So knowing where it is or where it's going, I turn to John on that.
That's very fair. I think, John, I'm very much aligned with you. I think so many different platforms have matured. There's so many different ways of going to market now that were very different back when we were all kind of just getting started in the industry. I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see some of that more consolidation start to happen as well. So I think it's going to be a really interesting year. I think marketing automation too, just for the life that it's given me in terms of just a career, definitely ripe for some sort of transformation to happen. But I think knowing all of that, I can't thank both of you guys enough, A, for just joining me today, but B, helping to give thousands of us careers. You guys literally created something that for me, when I came out of school, I went to school for marketing and I was always interested in tech. And I would never in my wildest dreams have thought that I could have worked at a company like Eloqua, have been able to use platforms like Marketo on a day-to-day basis as part of my job, with something that I'm passionate about. So really appreciate just both again, making the time today and the innovation that you guys have both brought to the space. And I'm sure all my marketing ops colleagues out there are probably feeling the exact same way. So I very much appreciate that. Is there anything you guys want to end with? Anything you guys like to plug? Anything you like to say to each other?
Well, thanks for having us, Mike. It's been fun. I haven't had a good excuse to catch up with John in a while, so definitely appreciate that. It's always always fun to chat. Haven't gone back to the marketing operations topics in a while, so it was a fun trip down the lane. Thanks a ton.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you. You don't seem quite as hyped anymore. It's not as fun.
Thank you again to both John and Steve for joining me today. Man, I still kind of a bit in awe that I was able to turn this around so quickly this year, and just so fortunate and so humbled that they agreed to come on and have this conversation. Definitely learned a lot of cool things. Definitely just have a whole new appreciation, I think, for what it was like being them during that time period where they were competing pretty hard, but you can see the amount of respect that they have for each other, the amount of admiration they have for each other. And you love to see it. Steve, I think, said something along the same lines, is like, it's more fun when you're cordial or when you're working above board with folks. So I couldn't agree more. Thank you again for listening this week. This was episode 4. My name is Mike McFarland. You can follow us on Instagram at 3mg.ca, on TikTok at 3mg.ca, on YouTube at 3mg-ca. You can subscribe and listen to this podcast on pretty much every podcasting service. And if it's not on one that you listen to, let me know and I'll make sure that we can get it there. Until later this week, we're doing 2 episodes this week. We're going to record another episode on Friday with the brilliant Emma Scott. Many of you may not know who Emma is, but you know who Emma is because she is the one who designed the beautiful 3MG logo and all the branding that we have today. And really looking forward to sitting down with her, getting her perspective on what it's like working with small companies like 3MG, how she got into design, and where her career's kind of gone running her own design firm as well. So really excited about that. Make sure, again, you subscribe, like, listen, share it with your friends. There are a few little cuss words here and there, I know. You maybe don't listen to this on the long car rides with your family if you want to put earmuffs on your kids or on folks that don't like those types of words. But at the end of the day, we're all about having fun. Marketing is fun. Have a great week, folks. We'll talk to you later this week. See ya.